Welcome to Season 10 of Talking with Traders as we begin 2025. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020, and we've just surpassed 200,000 downloads of Talking with Traders. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we welcome back to the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in various areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or, if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get into this week's interview. This episode of Talking with Traders takes us to Mexico, where my guest is Kerry Artak. He's a former trader in the CBOE and the CME, but now runs wickedstocks.com, among a couple of other things. Kerry, welcome to Talking with Traders.
Thank you, Garth. It's a pleasure being here. It's an honor, and I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, good to speak to you. I've been looking forward to this. So I gave a little bit of a bio there, but obviously there's way more to you than that couple of seconds that I gave. I'm interested to hear about your backstory. I know you were around in the 1987 crash on the floor. You know, tell us about, go back to the beginning and tell us your story without going into too much detail, because we don't have a lot of time. But, you know, in 2 minutes, let's get the summary version.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from the Chicago area. So I was always aware of the financial markets. I was never, you know, really aware of them. I was in the Air Force right out of high school for 4 years, the United States Air Force. And when I came back to the Chicago area at 22, I was looking for work. I found a few odd jobs, but then I bumped into a fellow at a pub who was a successful options trader at the Chicago Board of Options Exchange. He'd been doing it for about 10 years. He was in his mid-30s and was very successful, as I later came to find out, because I went to work for him as an inexperienced clerk. He liked to hire inexperienced people that he thought could understand the markets, because he didn't want too many people with preconceived notions. And so, you know, I worked with him. The understanding was that I would work with him for a year or two, and then he would back me financially to then trade my own account. And it would be a deal for about 3 years where he would make a percentage, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, fast forward to the stock market crash of 1987. I'd been on the trading floor with him from October of 86. So it was like my 1 year anniversary, where just, you know, it was just a pandemonium. And in a very, a lot of people think it was a single day event, but it really went on for weeks. Just high volatility, unprecedented volatility. As it turns out, that trader that I worked for, he traded volatility spreads, back spreads, ratio spreads in the options. You can go really deep on those, but it's really, you know, sort of like a back spread would be selling an at the money call and buying two out of the money calls. And if you could do that for even money, now you're very well positioned to the upside, on an explosion to the upside. And the put spread is just the opposite. Say buying an at the money put, or selling an at the money put and buying two out of the money puts. Now you're positioned to the downside. And he was always a put spread. He was always back spread the markets, always looking for pops, volatility pops. He would put these on in environments where the volatility was low. He would chart volatility. And if we're in a low volatility market, he'd put on the back spreads. And he was positioned very well for the crash. And he didn't trade large size, but these things just sort of exploded in value. And inversely, if your traders are listening, in a high volatility market, when you're reaching a high that hasn't been reached in some time, now you're looking to put on the ratio spreads, or you're selling premium, you're selling calls, you're selling puts
Yeah.
ever so carefully. So
Yes.
that was my that was my introduction, and my job for him was just to manage his delta, which is he was a delta neutral trader. So if he was long out of the money puts, he also wanted to be long out of the money calls. He was not trying to predict market direction. And so that was my early introduction to the markets. Now, after the crash occurred in 1987, it just sort of decimated the options markets. They went through a 3 to 5 year period where volatility had dropped significantly. Independent traders who had been making a fortune down there for years were getting squeezed out because the spreads tightened, the banks took over, Citigroup. I could go through a whole list of Goldman Sachs. They had their representatives down there. Many of the independent traders then went to work for the banks and were then salaried. And so now they're trading much larger size for the banks. And by the mid 90s, it had recovered, but the spreads were very tight. And your ability to make money down there, the gravy days were over. And it was during this period of time where I saw a kind of a dying market, at least temporarily, where I went across the street to the Chicago Board of Trade. And I brought my options experience there. I sold it to a firm that was very successful in trading 30-year Treasury bond futures. That was the largest trading pit in the world at the time. And it was three brothers, and they had a staff of about 20 people. They had clerks on the trading floor. And they hired me for my options experience. But this was late 80s, early 90s. This was, the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam Hussein. This was oil markets going through the roof. This is inflation and treasury markets going crazy. So they really didn't have the time to listen to me and my options experience and my options advice. But what I learned from them was just sort of being introduced to the whole idea of technical market analysis. I came from the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, where it was actually discouraged to attempt to determine directional probabilities in the underlying market. You're looking for disparities in the relationship between the different options. So you're buying undervalued, you're selling overvalued. Across the street of the Chicago Board of Trade, everybody was trying to guess market direction and make a fortune doing so.
Yeah.
And if you were good at technical analysis, and this firm was, then you had a leg up. You had an edge in the marketplace. And so they had a war room across the street. They called it the war room. There were three technicians who were just hovered over computer screens, looking at oscillators and moving averages and a whole assortment of different technical techniques. There were three or four of them that they used. They used 5-minute bar charts, 30-minute bar charts, moving averages, et cetera. And they would then call this information down every 15 minutes to the trading floor, who was a clerk who had a phone. And that became me eventually, and so I would pick up the receiver, the phone would ring, and I'm at the edge of the trading pit that had about 1,200 men yelling and screaming, an occasional woman too. And there was probably 10,000 people down there. It was just crazy. And so I'm now flashing this information into the trading pit with our own sort of a self-designed hand signal system. I would go, this was moving average, so I'd wave my hand, across the line. And that they would see moving average, and then I'd go 15. I'd do the 1-5. Okay, the 15. But yeah, so it would take about a minute to get all this information to them. But then a clerk inside the pit would scream it to our three traders in the pit. We have a buy signal, a 15-minute moving average, and so if they were short, they would reverse and go long. It was all very short-term intraday trading. I mean, it's beyond day trading. Pit trading was you're buying and selling constantly if you're scalping the market. And if you have a sense of market direction, you're skewing more to the upside if you think it's bullish and to the downside if you think it's bearish. So I wound up learning a lot from this firm. What I really came away with actually was not so much their techniques, which I actually began to question over time, because as I read more and more on the markets, I really sort of gravitated toward other techniques. One of the things I thought this firm was missing was long-term analysis. They were always looking at 15-minute bar charts because they were only interested in the next hour. They really weren't interested in the next 3 weeks. And I would look at a daily bar chart or a weekly bar chart, and I would see that there's a very well-defined, say, descending channel. a series of lows and highs that are running parallel to each other. Maybe they're dropping at the same rate. And this channel will hold the high and fall away. And then you'll get a signal by closing above this channel. That's a buy signal that could be on a daily or a monthly chart. Sometimes I would see a 3-year channel structure that's holding well, and we close above it, and we'd have a morning meeting, and I began to pipe up about what I was seeing in my own analysis. And eventually began to garner some respect and became one of the lead technicians for this company. And then, I'm kind of flash forwarding here, but I then took my advisory. I went on my own. I began to develop a reputation on the trading floor for being a good analyst. And there
Right.
was always the struggle for me between trading and analysis. You know, I thought I was going to the trading floors to be a trader, a successful trader, and they were all around me, and some of my friends became so. And I've been trading my own account, my own portfolio for over 30 years. But I learned a long time ago that you really have to kind of choose how you're going to allocate your time and energy. Analysis and putting it together and being able to articulate it well to your subscribers takes a certain degree of energy. And to be able to then trade and do that simultaneously was for me next to impossible. So my trading is longer term. I trade smaller size, so it doesn't occupy a lot of my attention, but just enough of my attention so that I don't forget about it. And then I'll hold a position for weeks and sometimes months on end. So, you know, that I've been a commodity analyst since 1996. I took my business basically home with me. I've been a remote worker since 96, where at that time it was satellite receivers and fax machines. And, you know, by the early 2000s, it was Windows 95 and file attachments and website logins. And that's really the way it is now. And I suppose I could flash forward even a little bit more if you like. It was during COVID. My daughter, who's now 28, was just coming out of school in 2020 and just graduated with really nothing going on in the middle of COVID. She's living in this quiet little Rocky Mountain ski town. And she had this idea, you know, Dad, I know that your methods you've been using for years in the stock market, but you've never actually, published them. You've never really sold them as a business. How about I create a website? Because she'd been doing, you know, website online media in college for several years, so she understood the basics. So she built out a website, and I started putting out just occasional analysis. Initially, we sold it, or at least promoted it to my database of former commodity subscribers and current commodity subscribers, and that got us to a certain point. And so it's been the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Her little brother joined us a year later. He graduated with a mathematics degree out of Colorado State, and he just loves the whole realm of studying charts. He's my right-hand man, you know. In fact, he's almost as good as I am now in terms of analyzing the markets. He's been looking over my shoulder for 4 years, and he gets out ahead of me on a lot of the stock stuff. So that is Wicked Stocks, and that's really kind of why I'm talking to you today, because my commodity business is largely business to business. As that evolved over time, it was no longer catering to floor traders who don't exist anymore. But now, really, I'd say 90% of my clientele are large-scale commodity producers. Some of the larger grain-growing operations in the Midwest U.S., some of the larger cattle ranching concerns west of the Mississippi, crude oil refiners in Texas and Louisiana, corn, wheat, soybeans, live cattle, that sort of thing. But with Wicked Stocks, it's all stock analysis. And because I'm so tuned into the day trader's mindset, our first two products, which we continue with today, are the SPY and the Triple Q, the S&P 500 ETF and the NASDAQ 100 ETF. They're probably the highest volume stock trading entities in the world. They're very well suited for not only long-term fund management, but also for day trading. And that's primarily what those are suited for. So with our daily SPY and our daily Triple Q analysis, it's all about, not all about, but largely about day traders, 3 to 5 day and 3 to 5 week swing traders who are looking for, you know, where can I buy it for the next month? And then take profits 3 weeks later. And we also, there's another side of it, which is just we offer two stock picks a week. And in that situation, it's not day trading at all. We're looking at weekly charts, some of which go back several years, 3, 5, 10 years. We're looking at channel formations that are developing from mid to large cap stocks. We're looking for setups that we are confident should yield a buy signal that is likely to play out in the weeks and months to follow. We don't look for anything that doesn't show the promise of a 20% return over time. Sometimes with these AI stocks, that 20% occurs in 3 days. And then, but with the large cap stocks, typically, or your more, your GEs and your Fords, that can take, 3 months easily. So and we mix it up. We don't want to get too heavily in high volatility stocks. We understand that you've really got to present the lower volatility stocks too for those who are managing a portfolio. So I've said a lot. I don't know if you had any questions or not.
Well, I do. I've got a whole list of questions that I'm going to ask you. You have answered some of them in that description now. But I know you mentioned that you're big on technical analysis, and I think we share an interest there because I'm also, big on technicals and have followed charts for 25 years and looked at charts for many, many years in terms of the analysis tool that I use to trade. I know when we were speaking previous to this interview and just doing an intro with each other, you meant that, mentioned that you like channels, which you alluded to now, but also you said back in the day you had up to eight different trading setups that you typically looked for, but over time you found that you've actually whittled that down to like two or three setups or two or three methods, I think you referred to it as. Now, what's behind that? Is that just I suppose trial and error over time, you realize simpler is better, or more, is there more to it than that?
Well, simpler is better, in my opinion. I think the cliche saying paralysis through analysis can happen with the more methods that you use. You think you're onto something, and then method number four, five, and six suggest not so fast. And then now, what to do? Do I wait for all six or eight of my methods to line up? Well, you might wait 10 years for that, And so you're prone to getting a lot of contradictory information if you look at a lot of different methods. And so there's always going to be one or two that you really like. And I understand that I use channels as my primary method. I also use speed lines as backup and Fibonacci retracements as backup. When I say backup, I don't typically use the latter two, like Fibonacci, as a trade entry point. Like for instance, if we're approaching a 3/8 Fibonacci, the market's put out a high 3 months ago, put out a low 2 weeks ago, and now it's rallying back up to the 3/8 Fibonacci. I am reluctant to sell that 3/8 Fibonacci just based on that information alone. But if it lines up with a channel structure, then I'm excited about it, And so I think it's the simplicity, understanding that, you can overanalyze the markets and understanding that nothing is 100%. If you've got a method that is 60% effective, you've got a winning method. And a lot of people don't understand that. It really comes down to, and I know you and I talked about this before, it comes down to risk management. And that's where a trader should begin. Not so much in analyzing all the different methods that are available. I mean, that's good stuff too. And they should understand that they should read the books and they should understand the methods and find one that they really like. But really, where one should start is creating a well-crafted risk management approach that they can, and it's trial and error. It's about getting in the market and say, well, that didn't work out very well. I need to make this adjustment. And then sort of dialing in a risk management approach that they can adhere to in a disciplined way that becomes eventually second nature. And once your risk management becomes second nature, it has a big impact on your trading psychology. The elements of fear and greed are much less prevalent. They just sort of subside because you're feeling at your core secure in your own that you're not going to question whether you're going to get out at the 2% drawdown. You're not going to question, if you can go through an ABC list of different parameters, when you begin to question your risk management, and you used to see this on the trading floor. There were fellows down there who made a fortune in 10 or 15 years. Then the markets would change. They wouldn't adapt. And they would lose their discipline, and it was their approach to risk management that they would often make big adjustments in. Maybe they would take more risk, and in a very short period of time, they could be wiped out because they forgot about really what brought them there to begin with. And so, risk management is really the core. And then, if you've got a good risk management, you've got a very good chance actually of doing well in the market over time. And so many new traders think it's about finding the right method for analysis. That's good stuff. Don't get me wrong, but it really comes down to risk management.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
trading psychology, yeah.
the
Go ahead.
analysis is really just a tool, isn't it? Your charts, your whatever it is that you're using to analyze the market, it's just a tool. It's not going to determine your success or failure. As you say, risk management is really what it comes down to. And I think what to go back to something that you said there about, if you've got a method that gives you 60% success rate, you're probably amongst the best in the world. And I can agree with that. On this podcast, I've interviewed a couple of big name traders, and it's always amazing when you talk to them and you say, well, what is your long-term hit rate? And with many of them, it's actually less than 50%, which means they're actually losing money on more trades than what they're making money on, yet they are hugely profitable. And it's because of exactly what you said. It's risk management. It's about keeping the losses small, right? And just realizing that, don't try and think that your whole career is going to be made out of this one next trade. Each trade
That's true.
is just one of the next 100 trades or one of the next 1,000 trades, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, so and risk management is really what it comes down to, as you said. Now I know that you've had a good year in 2024 with Wicked Stocks. You said that you had a 72% success rate last year. Is that right?
We did, but yes, by using channel structures. Now,
Channels.
yes, we are
Let's talk
also in
about
a.
these. Let's talk about the channels a little bit more. Let's describe it. I mean, we're doing this on video, but there are also audience members who listen to this on Spotify or one of the podcast channels who can't visually see what we're doing. So you're going to need to describe it in a way that sort of someone who's listening can also understand. But talk to us about channels and what it is that you're specifically looking for as a trade setup when it comes to that.
Yeah, I can give you an example of a horizontal channel,
Right.
and I think when I articulate this, anybody can visualize this. But the vast majority of channels have a certain angle; they're either rising or descending through time. excuse me, if you were looking at a weekly bar chart and the market drops to a price, you can pick wherever it's dropping from, but let's just say it puts out a low of 50 even. And then, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks later, it rallies to a price of 70. And then 3 or 4 or 5 weeks later, it drops back to 50. And now, on the way back up from 50, you've got a double bottom. If you take out that 70 high, that's another channel. It's a horizontal channel. I would call it more of a congestive possibility, especially if you top out at 70 and fall away again. And it would be the settlement above 70 that would be the buy signal. If we are looking at line studies at wickedstocks.com, where it's more of 6 months and longer, we like to add a 1% violation threshold to that for what I call technical clarity. In other words, a 1% above 70 would be 70.70. It would be $70.70. And so if we were to close any day at 70.70 or higher, you're now in a buy signal. And you're now long the market. And if you're looking at that chart, you've got a double bottom of 50, an intermediate high of 70. Let's say that you traded inside that 50 to 70 area for 3 months. The more well-defined it is, the more congestive it is. In this particular example, if you close above 70 by the 1% margin, you're now looking for a reduplication of that range to the upside. In other words, you're adding 20 to it. Your target is now 90. This is basic. There are, not every chart is the same, but this is a classic example. example of what we look for. The more frequent example, and I can take it a little step further, is you go to a price of 50 as your first low, you rally to 70, then you drop to 40. And now you come off the 40, you're back above 50. And let's say the distance between that first 50 low and that second 40 low is 10 weeks. So, and that's a price of 10, 50 minus 40, you know, it's a difference of 10 points in 10 weeks. So that intermediate high of 70, you now project a descending channel that it's dropping a point a week. It's just simple math, right?
Yeah.
So five weeks later now, you have a channel top at 65. And so it's not 70 you're looking to take out to the upside. It's 65. It's I just call it sort of pattern recognition, pattern disruption. Mm-hmm. Now, oftentimes, the market will top out at 65 and then fall away again back to 50 or even 40 or lower. And so it's a sell opportunity. But if we close above 65 by the 1% margin, if it's 6 months or more, these are something that we throw out there all the time on wickedstocks.com. So it's kind of a habit for me to say these things. But if you close above 65, now you're looking for, well, you have your price targets. You know, what I will often then do is reduplicate that range of that channel to the upside, which would probably take you up 20 or 25 points into the 80s or 90s, you know. And when I'm always looking for other things. So that could be kind of a near-term channel. And maybe that near-term channel that I just described above 65 exists in the confines. And when I say near-term, let's say that that's a two-month channel structure that I just defined. We get a buy signal above 65. And this often happens where now we're rallying up to another channel that is 5 years in the making, that is very well defined. So our target now is the five-year channel top. And so every stock is a little different. And we did have a 72% win rate. In other words, 72%, we put out two stock picks a week.
Right.
About 100 a year. And, you know, roughly 70% of them worked out. Now, when we say worked out, my son does all the back testing and everything. And it was a 10% move or better. Right. Now, some of these were 50% and even 100% returns on some of these AI stocks. You know, we nailed Nvidia a year and a half ago when it broke out. Right. And we had a buy recommendation. I don't even remember anymore. These charts just sort of swim around in my head, you know. But there was a very well-defined four-year, mostly horizontal channel top in Nvidia. And we tested it. We fell away for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then we took it out. And we had this upper target that was met in about 3 or 4 months, which was beyond what I was even expecting, you know. So that's what can happen. You know, the AI announcements and such, you know. So
No, I remember that breakout on Nvidia. It was a big one. And it, as you say, it ran about, I think it ran after that about another 300% or something. It was a huge move. And obviously, it's now looking like it's topping out. But certainly in my eyes, it looks like it's topping out. It's making one of those channels, as you say, between what looks to me like about $100 and about $150, quite a wide channel. But
I would agree with that. In fact, we've been watching this closely. We provide daily Nvidia analysis for free, actually, on our Wicked Stocks YouTube channel. So I'm sort of plugging our YouTube channel right now. Yes. If that's okay. But we've got wickedstocks.com where people can subscribe for $47 US a month, and they get the daily triple Q, the daily SPY. They get the two stock picks a week. They also get weekly Apple stock analysis, weekly S&P 500 index, and NASDAQ 100 index. That is the package. But, you know, the YouTube channel has been a big driver of our success the last year and a half, especially where we offer daily Nvidia and daily Tesla analysis in the same exact format. We don't cut corners. It's the same exact format you might see in the daily triple Q and the daily SPY. So I agree with you on Nvidia. There's a descending channel that about 2 weeks ago was around 140, 141. We hit it. And there's a longer term channel that is about 6 months. It goes back to that August low of last year that is right now about 106, 107. And we consider that an objective. Now, we came close to testing that yesterday, but it's also the area for any shorts to reel in their short positions, reverse and go long. Because from 106, 107, I could see not only the upper 130s again over the next few weeks, but the mid 160s, new highs basically over the next few months. I would agree with that.
You alluded to risk management as such an important part of your success or failure as a trader. And obviously we touched on that, but I just want to go back to that point now. When it comes to your own trading, and I know you focus a lot more on analysis rather than actual trading, but you do some trading yourself, but it's small.
Yes.
What are your rules around risk per trade as a percentage of your capital? And then also to that, do you have maximum number of holdings in at any one time, maximum total portfolio risk at any one time? Can you talk to me a little bit about that and how you manage risk or how you advise your clients to manage their risk?
Well, the way I break my own portfolio down is what we offer as a case in point to our subscribers. We understand that our subscribers run the gamut from day traders out to long-term investors. But for my own investing, my own portfolio management, I don't allocate more than 10% of my portfolio to any particular stock. In fact, I like to break it into about 10 different stocks. 10 for me is a number that I can hold in my brain, 10 different stocks. If I get out in the 20s and 30s, I begin to lose track of some of the stocks. And if you lose track of one of your investments, you're losing interest. And that's the last really thing you want to do. So if I've got 10% of my portfolio on one of my stocks, well,
And
that's where I start.
that's ungeared, right? Just to clarify. So that's unleveraged. 10%
Correct.
of total capital
Yes.
invested in a single stock. Okay.
Yes, exactly. It's not a leveraged ETF, or
Yeah.
if that's what you're referring
Yeah,
to. Yeah.
that's exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know, when I enter a trade, I just put in a 2% stop loss, a good till cancel stop loss on my total trading capital. And what does that mean? It means that that stock could actually drop 20%
Right.
before it tags my 2%. And that rarely happens.
Yeah.
And then I can finesse it. So I'll put in the 2% drawdown on my total trading capital just as a starting point. And then, let's say in this example that we had earlier, where, we've got the double bottom at 50 and the intermediate high at 70, and we close a price of 70.71% above that. And now I'm long. Let's say I'm long at 70.70. I'm looking for 90. Well, I will put a 2% drawdown stop loss on that stock. That would probably be more in the neighborhood of a 20% drawdown on the stock itself, which would take you, if it's 70, it would take you down to a price of about 56, and there's no way I'm going to let the stock go down that far unless it's one of these black swan events. So you're protecting against the black swan event, right? But for the most part, I am raising that stop. If the stock begins to move away in my favor, I'm raising that stock to 1% below that channel or 1% below 70. So if we break 70 to the downside, 1% below that is going to be what, 69.30, if I'm doing my math correctly. I might even put it at 68, but I'm in the 1/10 of 1%, 2/10 of 1% drawdown, which I'm very comfortable with. And that's the beauty of technical analysis, in my opinion, is because you have exact numbers you can use that are valid technical support levels, technical resistance levels. They're not 100%, but they are valid levels. And in my opinion, if we close above 70 and we've got the buy signal, and this happens a fair amount. The market rallies to a price of 73, 74 over the next few days, and then comes falling back to close below not only 70, but below the 1% mark below that. So I use the 1% threshold a lot, both in entering a trade and in exiting a trade. And if we violate to the downside subsequently, that channel at 70, buy a 1% margin of 69.30, settlement based typically, or lower, I am out of the trade. And sometimes I'll even go short.
I was
Because I
going
learned
to
a
ask
long,
that. Do you
yeah.
go short as well as long?
Yes. And that's either shorting the stock outright or reaching for some out of the money puts. In this case, I might reach for those 50 strike out of the money puts. And depending on how long it took for reaching from 50 to 70, I would then sort of estimate how long it might get down back down to 50. And then I would choose my strike properly in terms of expiration. But it took me years. I want to say it took me the better part of 10 years to really come to terms with that, because there were so many times where we would close above 70, and I'd issue a buy signal to my clients, or I'd go long myself, and the market within a week would fall back and close back below, and it'd be a failed buy signal. And I would rack my brain. What did I miss? Was there a 3/8 Fibonacci at 74? Why did the market top out at 74? Was there a 200-day moving average? If there was a 200-day moving average that held it to the penny, look out. I would actually begin to adjust my analysis long term and incorporate a 200-day moving average. I'm nothing against 200-day moving averages, but it was this lack of security, a lack of trust in my system, and what I arrived at, nothing's 100%. And in fact, channels are valid templates for interpreting the market. And if the market puts out a classic buy signal and then falls away and rejects that buy signal, it's telling you something. It's telling you it has no impulse, no interest in rallying. And in fact, you should respect this market's susceptibility to falling away, to selling off in a big way. And I'll tell you, with some of these classic setups, if the signal doesn't work and it's rejected, it is a almost an equally valid sell signal. In fact, I would say that it's an equally valid sell signal
Well,
that you
that's
can
it.
actually reverse and play the short side.
What do they say? From failed moves come fast moves in the opposite direction. And
Absolutely true.
that's definitely a sort of a philosophy that I apply in my own trading as well, looking for valid breakouts, but also, breakouts that fail, because those ones very often do come back and they're actually quite nice trading opportunities in the opposite direction once everybody is kind of caught on the wrong side, right? And they all have to unwind their trade.
You've seen beautiful examples of this recently in both the NASDAQ 100 and S&P 500, or the triple Q in the SPY, which is what we analyze every day, where the SPY, the S&P 500, pushed to new highs by a very minor degree, held those highs for several days, only to quietly fall away, and then the flurry began. So everybody headed for the hills, and we got the
It's
big sell.
been
Now,
classic false break on the S&P 500 recently.
Now, all the everything that's happening, politically and economically has helped, but that's the other beauty of technical analysis, is that it has this uncanny way of I don't I'm, it doesn't predict actual events, but it kind of gets you out of the way. It tells you, something's not right here. Time to get out of this thing, so
I know the charts often tell a story, that they tell the fundamental story often before the fundamental news is even out there. The charts are
True.
starting to tell you something's happening. We're getting towards the end of our allotted time, Kerry, but I'm enjoying chatting to you. But unfortunately, we do have a time limit. But I mean, you mentioned that you've got a son and daughter who are both young adults, and they're involved with you in the business. But so you've obviously done this. But I often ask guests, if you have a youngster coming to you and they're wanting to get involved in the markets as a career, what is one, golden nugget of advice you would give to them?
Well, I would echo, the conversation we had 20 minutes ago, which is start with risk management. That is your platform. That is your base. How much you're going to risk on any given trade as a percentage of your total trading capital? How are you going to get out of winning trade? Are you going to use a trailing stop? Are you going to raise that stop so that in the end, when you get out of that trade, you're getting out on weakness, you're stopped out to the downside, or are you going to try to pick a top? You're going to scale out. These are little things that you really don't know truly until you've been trading for a little while anyway, but you can at least start with, I'm not going to risk more than 1% or 2% of my trading capital. And for a new trader who's got 10,000 US in an account, they're going to quickly realize, if I risk only 2%, my stop losses are going to be incredibly tight. Then they have to choose that, no, I'm not going to put all 10,000 on one stock. I'm going to allocate 1,000 here and 1,000 there. And now that 2% is, it allows that stock to drop 10 or 20% before you're stopped out. And you'll find out quickly that you won't have to take that kind of risk, that your stop losses will be much smaller. And if you can let, it's a cliche, if you can take your losses early and let your profits ride, that's what you learn with risk management. And then you'll find I have a book that I would recommend, Technical Analysis of the Financial Markets. You're probably aware of it, John Murphy. I read it back in the late 80s. I probably read it 5 or 6 times over since then, just as a reminder. And he's just got everything in there, And it's a wonderful way to become acquainted with numerous technical analysis methods. Another book, and I know you asked this before, and
Well,
you've
yeah,
probably
I
read this
wanted to
book.
ask you about books, so I'm glad you're bringing these up. That was going to be my final question, or second final question.
I imagine you've read Market Wizards by Jack Schwager.
All of them, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of my formative books when I was coming up through the Chicago Board of Trade. Just reading, that book was written in the 80s. I know he's got new editions, but he was interviewing fellows who just were, they just cleaned house in the 70s. But in the 70s, you had these protracted moves, these trend moves in the currencies and the agriculturals that were just relentless. You don't, well, you still see it in the commodities, but it's not as protracted on a year in, year out basis as you would see with some of these disruptions in the currency markets and such. But another saying that I've always remembered, there was a Pakistani fellow who was a really good trader at the Chicago Board of Trade. He wasn't in the pit. He was always standing outside. He paid for his full membership, but he would listen to the noise and he would make his trades during the day. And he would always tell me, he says, Kerry, don't forget, the markets are always young, the markets are always young. So, don't be afraid that you're losing time. The markets are always young. They'll always be there. They're going to go through their changes and their ebbs and flows, but there'll always be a market to trade,
Excellent. I've got one last question. It's on the subject of books as well, but you must have read the book by Marty Schwartz, Pitbull. I don't know.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask, did you know Marty? Was he around when you were there on the floor, or was that a different
He
era?
was, but I didn't know them. I've only heard of him.
Right, okay. That was one of my favorite books that I've ever read. It's a good story.
It's been a long time, but
Super. Well, talking of long time, it's been a short time speaking to you, but it's been a pleasure. I've got to wrap it up now, I'm afraid, because we're kind of limited by time. But it's been a great pleasure speaking to you, Kerry. The last thing really is just where do listeners to this podcast get hold of you? Obviously, you've mentioned wickedstocks.com, and you've got a YouTube channel. Where else can they get hold of your work?
Well, they can, if they're interested in commodities, they could go to Artac Advisory. That's my last name, Artac. But if it's stocks, and I'm assuming that's the vast majority of the listeners, it would either be wickedstocks.com, WICKED stocks.com, or and if they want to be introduced to our work to see if they like it or not, they could go to our YouTube channel. You go to YouTube and just search Wicked Stocks, and you'll see every single trading day we put out a stock pick on Nvidia and Tesla, and we also put out occasional Bitcoin and TLT, the Treasury ETF, and an assortment of other stocks. So we put a lot of good stuff out on our YouTube channel, all designed to get people to subscribe to wickedstocks.com.
Obviously, fantastic. Well, Kerry, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. I can see it looks like a beautiful day out the back there in Mexico. So I hope you're going to go and
As always,
surf or do something on the beach later. I can see it right there behind you. It looks amazing.
Thank you. You have a
Take
great day,
care.
Garth.
And you too.
Take care
Thanks,
now. I
Kerry.
appreciate the opportunity.
Rightio. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app,
Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.